The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You're very welcome along to the 9 till noon show for this Thursday, the 8th of June 2023. How are you doing? I do hope you're all very well indeed. Thank you very much to Donald Kavanagh, who sat in for me Wednesday and Tuesday. It feels like a lifetime since I've been at work, and what brilliant weather we had. And I'm lucky enough to have the health to get out and enjoy it. And I hope you all did too. Let us know what you're up to, what you're doing, and have your say on the topics of the day. 086 60 25000. Those lines are now open. You can give us a call too on 07491 25000 if you so wish. And also, you can email comments at highlandradio.com. All right, it is a Thursday, which means there's a plethora of papers. So let's run through and pick out some news stories from the front and inside of them. The Tyrconnell Tribune, over €92,000 has been raised as a result of the 2023 Relay for Life Donegal. But with money still to come in from the various teams who took part, the final figure is expected to rise further, which is a cracking figure. And while the funding is on the up, chairperson Robert O'Connor has confirmed his intention to step down from a position he's held since the first relay in Donegal back in 2012. And he let me know this when he was in for a chat last week. And hopefully Robert will come in when he has a bit of time and sit down and have a talk about his life and his involvement in relay. So he committed to do that. So we'll have him in studio in the not too distant future. Well, at the Sunday's closing ceremony, Treasurer Drew Corrie announced a figure of 92,411 raised through the efforts of the 29 teams who took part in this year's event, and still counting, as he indicated. It would be great to see more teams involved, though. I think they had over 70 when it first started. And it is one of those diseases, cancer, in that it will affect half of us, but it will affect all of us directly and indirectly. And I hope that money, of course, that money, I don't hope, I know that money is going to go to a great cause. And we were there for a bit on Saturday as well, and it was lovely. It was really, really nice. I think it was Saturday. It was Saturday, yeah. The Donegal Democrat, what do you think about this? Some 1,750 Ukrainian refugees could be housed on a cruise ship in Killybegs. It's following a proposal by a local businessman. The plan would see refugees temporarily housed on a cruise ship docked in the fishing port. The document was submitted last September to the Department for Children, Equality, Disability, Integration and Youth by the group, which includes the former Killybegs Harbour Master, Captain Jay Kelly. Now, the proposal aims to ease current accommodation problems by housing refugees on the ship on the north side of the pier, which they claim would not obstruct fishing boats or interfere with local businesses. Now, this was a proposal that was some time ago. And there are incredible pressures, I suspect. I wonder, maybe it's contained in the rest of the article here, if those proposals have been rejected at this stage. As a group of Donegal businessmen, I read on here, with extensive marine industry and managerial experience, we propose to manage the following solution on behalf of the government to provide accommodation for up to 1,750 Ukrainian refugees, a spokesperson for the group, Philip Mulville, told Donegal Live. So it seems there's still active proposals. Okay, you can read more in the paper there. What do you think? 1,750 Ukrainian refugees in a cruise ship on the pier at Killybegs. I mean, obviously, it would it wouldn't be an issue in terms of housing or a room for that matter, but that's not often what the issues are, is it? It's about the services that are available, not just only to support that amount of people, 1,750, but also the population that already exists in terms of local GP services and so on and so forth. But anyway, we'll see what they come up with that one. Just as I say, want your views coming into us as well. The Donegal News tells us that a survey attendances at masses in the Raphoe Diocese has shown that congregations are continuing to decline. Figures released by the diocese have revealed how in one church in Donegal, an average of only 5 people attended weekday mass. Bishop Alan McGuckian has called on clergy and the faithful to use the result and plan for the future as not simply a matter of managing decline. The survey of the diocese, 33 parishes undertaken between February and March, heralded change is certainly coming, the bishop said. So why did you, if you are a Catholic, and not everyone listening is, Why did you stop going to Mass more recently? Is it that you don't have the time in the day, that you don't see any benefit from it? Are you one of these people? And maybe this is a private question, but we're not asking anyone to state anything publicly. Are you the type that sort of, you continue to be religious, but you just don't see a benefit personally in going to Mass? And if you don't go to Mass, then is it fair to roll up for your Holy Communion or your confirmation or your wedding, or for that matter, your funeral? Because the people's relationship with church is changing. There's just no doubt about that. But why did you stop going? If it was more recently, you know, I think if you go back a certain period of time, there's a lot of people, and I would have known some of them, that didn't like what was going on and just disengaged with the attendance part of it. But there's a new generation of people, children, that aren't being taken to Mass, and why not? Oh, wait, is it something that the church needs to change, or is it just a change within you? 086 60 25,000, and maybe you continue to be very religious, but you just don't see that as a necessity, or maybe you just have chosen to stay watching Mass remotely where that option is available to you. As I say, it'd just be interesting to have a conversation as to why we are seeing those declines. 086 60 25,000. The Derry News tells us this morning that young people on dirt bikes are going to end up killing a child, according to a concerned parent from the Gallia area of the city. Speaking to the paper, the parent said there was a near miss between a dirt bike and a child playing on the green area between Gallia Park and Fergleen last week, I beg your pardon. They are going to end up killing somebody, said the parent. There are a couple of alleyways in the area and there are lots of young Wains playing there, and if they fly down on their bikes and scooters, they're going to end up killing a Wain. Now, if you want to get involved in that conversation too, from outside the Republic, 00 35 387 60 25,000. Perhaps some good news in terms of your weekly shop, because we're anticipating a price war. Now, Tesco has this morning announced that it is going to reduce 700 products by an average of 10%. So they're not your staples per se, as in, you know, your flour, your bread, your milk, butter and things like that there. It's across the range. So if Tesco do it, and of course then they can bring out their advert saying we're cutting the cost of your weekly shop, you would hope then that others might follow, and they might even go a little lower, who is to say. But if you could save 10% per week on your big shop, wouldn't that be really good news? Households are to get some relief, we read, from soaring grocery prices as the supermarket price war moves up a gear. Tesco will cut the cost of hundreds of products, and other retailers say they are reviewing their prices. Tesco is reducing prices by an average of 10% across more than 700 products. The move's expected to force a response from rivals Lidl, Don's, Supervalu and Aldi. The reduction represents a stepping up on recent cuts to the price of own brand bread, butter and milk announced by the main chains. The decision to reduce prices across a range of goods comes as grocery price inflation has reached record levels. Research from Kantar said prices rose by 16.5% in the 12 weeks to May 14 compared with the same period last year. Now, we'd love to see them return because it's costing us an average €1,200 extra a year. And now maybe we can mitigate some of that by choosing different brands, or maybe trying to reduce our food waste, which is astronomical. I think it was discussed on the program yesterday. But anything that sees 10% going off your weekly shop, I think has to be welcomed. Right, the Irish Times this morning. State to pay EU £1.5 million to house 350 asylum seekers. The state will pay £1.5 million to a European relocation system because the Republic does not have the space to accommodate an additional 350 international protection applicants. Now, if they're safe elsewhere, £1.5 million seems like a relatively low fee given the millions that are being spent every week on accommodation. Well, Minister for Justice Helen McEntee and Minister for Integration Roderick O'Gorman will receive cabinet approval today for the £1.5 million financial contribution, which will be made to meet the state's commitment under an asylum seeker relocation system known as the Voluntary Solidarity Mechanism. The state previously agreed to accept an extra 350 international protection applicants as part of the The solitary agreement. Imagine they've missed out words on the front of a national newspaper. That's crazy. Which sees international protection applicants relocated in various EU member states. Right, let's go on to the mail, I believe it is. Yes, indeed. Just in case you were wondering, Tánaiste de Mícheál Martin has confirmed, and he said it on this show, but his mind hasn't changed. He has confirmed he intends to lead Fianna Fáil into the next election while Public Expenditure Minister Pascal Donoghue has pledged to stand again. Mr. Martin was asked to confirm his intentions as worries emerged that the party leader, who has been at the helm for over a decade, could leave for an ice wee post in Europe. I'll be leading Fianna Fáil into the next general election, and that is my objective, he said yesterday. Now, I'm not sure that necessarily means he actually is, because if he said yesterday that I'm giving it strong consideration, well, that would automatically de facto trigger a leadership campaign, wouldn't it? So I wouldn't say that it is a lock-on. You know, I think he has options. I think politically he's achieved everything in politics that he wants to. I think we're in a thankless period of being a politician at this time. So perhaps if he could get a nice cosy post in Europe, now's the time to go. So even though he has committed to leading Fianna Fáil into the next general election, I would have my doubts on that. But then he goes on to say, I think we should go full term with this government. I intend to lead the party full term and into the next general election. The Tánaiste admitted he has been asked about different positions as rumours swirled that he might be eyeing up a role as an EU commissioner, but he reaffirmed that he will be leading Fianna Fáil. So if you're a Fianna Fáil supporter, do you welcome that news, or would you like to see someone else have a crack at it? And if so, who? 08660 25000. The Farmers' Journal this morning: concerns are growing that farm payments under acres could be at risk if the required scheme work is not completed on time. Agricultural advisers have told the Department of Agriculture they're under severe workload pressure due to the range of new CAP schemes, coupled with 46,000 farmers being accepted into acres. Their most immediate concern is the walking and scoring of 600,000 hectare of land in the scheme and the submission of grassland and habitat scorecards. How are your young ones, if they're doing the Leaving Cert, faring? It's covered in the front, inside the Irish Daily Star today. Leaving Cert students experienced a well-pitched and broadly appealing paper for both the higher and ordinary level English paper one exam, an expert said. Lorraine Tuffy, who's also an English teacher at Jesus and Mary Secondary School in Sligo, says students sitting junior cycle higher had a bizarre and ill-fitting challenge. She added that those sitting the ordinary level paper had a challenging but comfortably manageable exam. Now, when you see them going in to do their Leaving Certs, you don't envy them, do you? Tell us your Leaving Cert stories. Do you have a story from you? I don't, because I didn't do mine. I left it before that. But did you do your Leaving Cert? What was it like? Any horror stories for us? 086 60 25000. They're all in school now anyway, aren't they? They won't know what we're talking about. Let us know. Not good news if you're a variable mortgage holder on a tracker mortgage. The Sun tells us that hard-hit mortgage holders are facing two more interest rate hikes in the coming months, the Irish Central Bank governor has warned. Gabrielle McClough expects the European Central Bank to keep on increasing rates, and indeed they committed to that themselves, and they say they will keep rates as higher for as long as it takes to suppress inflation. But hard-hit homeowners already reeling from a series of interest rate hikes, which have sent their mortgage repayments soaring, have been told to brace for more pain. Central Bank Governor expects rates to remain elevated for longer than markets anticipated. And there are some people in just dire situations. Anyone with a variable mortgage, I mean, there's a lot of people have the capacity to absorb some increases, so we'll accept that, won't we? But there are those, particularly with vulture funds, and I would love to see the government do something about enabling people to switch from a vulture fund to a pillar bank. A mechanism that would allow that to happen would give people an awful lot of more hope. But there are people stuck on really high interest rates, and as they go up further. And it's often, not always, but it's often people that have a defective concrete house or have the least resources, the least at the end of the month, that end up paying the highest, which happens an awful lot across society, doesn't it? Which is really, really unfortunate. So hopefully, I'd love to see some action in regards to that issue. And the Irish Daily Mirror today tells us that more animals are being abandoned, abused or neglected since the pandemic ended. The Irish Society for Prevention of Cruelty to Animals launched an urgent emergency appeal yesterday called Stop the Pain following a sharp rise in cruelty cases across Ireland. They said the surge, which began following COVID-19 pandemic, is placing a significant financial burden and demand on the organisation. ISPCA Chief Cyril Sullivan said the number of cruelty cases and neglected animals was expected to be double the number of this year compared to... Again, this is there's more spelling mistakes in the newspapers. I can't understand with all the editors that they have that they put it in and have extra words and some words missing. But anyway, ISPCA Chief Cyril Sullivan said the number of cruelty cases and neglected animals was expected to double this year compared to 2022. And I think their accommodation, their central accommodation, is packed at this stage. What's going on there, I wonder? Is it that people... Is it the cost of living and they can't afford to feed their pets? Is it that they got a pet during lockdown, which seems a lifetime ago, but their life has changed and there are responsible ways to move an animal on, isn't there? I don't know. Anyway, we're going to be speaking to the ISPCA about that a little later on, just to get a real sense of what's going on and the dire need that they have, and if you are willing to, how you might be able to help. Okay, that was a run through the papers this morning. I want to wish a good morning to Elaine, Charlie, Paul, Dolores, Marie, Audrey, who are watching our live stream broadcast across our social media, YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland. Very convenient to watch on your phone, tablet, your smart TV, or indeed your Fire Stick. We're across Facebook as well, Highland Radio Ireland, Highland Hub. And you can also catch us on Twitter and on our website. Just click Watch Live. Okay, our first guest on the show will be joining us very shortly. And it's a good news story in terms of education. Stay right where you are. This is the 9 till noon show. Okay, so regular listeners would know we carried the story here over concerns that a new school building for Gaelscoil na Cathair Maestra in Donegal Town was being deferred. And fair play to parents and staff, I'm sure, they got together and said, no, this is not going to happen here because we've been in prefabs since this school was founded, effectively, and we now need proper facilities. And it looks like that's going to happen. Deirdre O'Gara is of the Parents Association and joins us now. Hi, Deirdre.
Hi, Greg. Thanks for having me on this morning.
That's great, and thanks for accepting the invite. Okay, so the sod is going to be turned, the official sod turning tomorrow. It's fantastic news. It's historic, too.
It sure is. It's absolutely fantastic. 1 p.m. tomorrow, we will be turning the sod, and work has commenced at the school. So it's great news, and it really is a historic day. You know, we've had a long wait since 1999, since the doors first opened.
And it's been a roller coaster, hasn't it? And the big dip, not in a positive way, was when it was amongst that group of 60 plus schools that were sort of shelved. And you know, we had that concern that we could lose the contractor and what have you. And thankfully, it was a very anxious time, but now those fears have been allayed.
Yeah, exactly. We were so close to starting back then, and just for it to be pulled from under our feet, we were really upset. You know, we were devastated, I suppose, as such. But to have managed to overturn that outcome, you know, it's brilliant. But, you know, we have such support from everybody, from yourself, from all the local radio stations and papers, and even national papers. So I suppose for only for the support that we got, we wouldn't be where we are today. So we have to thank everybody for that.
Yeah, but ultimately, I think the credit goes down to the people that organised and got out on the picket line, so to speak, and done up the placards, because that made it more easy to sort of get behind it, if you know what I mean. So fair play to those of you. That's where the credit goes, as far as I'm concerned. I think there's a duty in the media, and they have a duty to back the people, but it was you guys that sort of gave the media something to back.
Yeah, you know, like, that was never our plan. We never wanted to be out protesting, but unfortunately we had no choice, and just thankfully it did work for us. And, you know, you go to the school today, the diggers are there and the work has commenced, and we'll have a new school come September 24th.
And does that make the official sod turning, do you think, with everything that's been gone through, even more significant and even more of a cause for celebration and for, you know, current and past people and parents who've been through the school to come out for this event?
Yes, it definitely has. Now, we've decided to make this day, you know, a joyous day, and yeah, for all the kids that are there, for the past pupils, present pupils, parents, and all the Gaelscoil community as a whole. So we've invited everybody 1 o'clock tomorrow to celebrate it and just to have a great day for the kids.
Brilliant stuff. And where is the school being built as it relates to the current prefabs, Deirdre? Is it behind them, in front of them, on top of them? I don't know.
No, so we're very lucky. We have quite a big site.
Right.
So the school has been built in three phases. So the first phase is the actual school building itself, and that will be completed in September. That will be completed in the summer of 24 and ready to walk into it in September 24. So that's been built at the entrance to the school in the grounds that we never use, mm-hmm, because it is quite a large site. So for all of next year, the school will continue in prefab. There'll be no having to move them or nothing. The school will continue as normal. And then once the first phase is opened, the second phase will be removing the prefabs and building the S&A unit.
Right,
and then the final phase will be just the groundwork.
Yeah, it's all very exciting. Okay, brilliant. It's going to be a great day. It's tomorrow at 1, isn't it? Or today? Tomorrow?
Tomorrow at 1 o'clock, yeah.
Excellent. Okay. Yeah. And as you say, it is a time for celebration. There's no point raking over the past. We are where we are now. So it'll be a brilliant thing for the kids.
It really is a time for celebration.
Yeah, and they'll be able to see the progress as it goes on too, which will be really exciting for them.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It really is. It's a great news story. You know, but just we really have to thank everybody that helped us to get where we are today. You know, we've a lot of the local community. We've had quite a few politicians. We've had Joe McHugh has been by our side the whole way, and he really needs to be recognised for it. We've had Thomas Pringle, Piers Doherty. They fought for us in the Dáil when we needed it. And as I said, yourselves, you were just all brilliant. And only for you, we wouldn't be here today.
Well, as I say, I think it's down to you guys. But anyway, Deirdre, we could battle that one out all day. I'll let you get back to it. Thanks, Deirdre. Take care
of
yourself.
That's brilliant. Thanks, Greg.
All right,
bye
bye-bye.
Now. Bye-bye.
That's Deirdre O'Gara there, who is of the Parents Association of Gaelscoil na Cathair Maistre. The diggers are on site. Isn't that great? And also the sod is being turned officially tomorrow, 1 o'clock, and they are inviting past parents, pupils, teachers and the wider Gaelscoil community to share that special day of celebration with them. And as I say, in Donegal Town there, it's sort of on the old Lahey Road, and but you sat nav it if you're going, if you don't know where it is already. And that all kicks off tomorrow afternoon at 1 p.m. A caller says, hi, if Ironmore Island's population is dwindling, could we not get some Ukrainians to move there? Another, we need to do something about our transport at night time, especially at festival time. Seeing people out for all hours dependent on friends and parents to leave them home, they should be able to sleep at home. No taxis or buses. It is a shame. Yeah, indeed, I agree. This caller says this country is a disgrace. Why were these suggestions for housing citizens never put forward before? But I don't think any... The problem with homelessness is countrywide. It's particularly focused in Dublin. Their rate is significantly higher than here in the Northwest. A lot of people that are homeless require more than just a cabin on a cruise ship. Do you know, they require lots more supports than that. I don't think putting a cruise ship in Dublin Harbour and all of a sudden saying to the homeless people who are homeless or rough sleepers, who want get on the cruise ship, that's all you... That's not how it works. I believe, anyway, and I could be open to correction here, hotel rooms, cruise ships, temporary accommodation for people fleeing a war, yes. But in terms of the homeless in this country, we need to build proper, adequate housing. If there are other supports that are required in terms of whatever it might be, in terms of financial supports, or maybe there could be issues with addiction, I don't know what it is, then that's a different thing altogether. And we should be able to do both, because we are incredibly well resourced in this country, we're told all the time. So, you know, I think that the homelessness issue, the 12,000 plus people now that are homeless, and the many more that don't really have certainty about their accommodation, surely a cruise ship or a hotel is not a solution to that problem, is it? But I'll read this person's text in full here, of course. This country is a disgrace. Why were these suggestions for housing citizens never put forward before? It's all down to the huge money landlords are being paid. The quicker the rate to house the Ukrainian community falls to the same as other citizens, the quicker we might see more equality in availability. And another one on that issue, no mention of the sewage from a cruise ship or doubling the population of Killybegs. It's not right pushing refugees on small villages and towns in Ireland with no consultation or discussion of the cultural or social implications. If there was a war in Ireland, would Ukraine put us up on a cruise ship on the Black Sea and pay us money and feed us? Hardly. Why don't they put the cruise ship on the Swilly to house mica-plagued families? Again, I'm not really sure a cruise ship on the Swilly is a solution to the people affected by mica. They require modular homes, affordable homes. They require payment breaks on mortgages, whatever it might be. I don't think housing them on a... And I could be wrong. If anyone's affected by that and they'd welcome a cruise ship in the Swilly, please let me know. 086 60 25,000. Right, okay. Now, Ireland has the highest levels of loneliness in all of Europe. In a survey carried out by the European Commission's Joint Research Centre, Ireland is the only country across the bloc with more than one in five people saying they feel lonely. The EU's average is only at 13%. The lowest levels of loneliness were found in the Netherlands, Croatia and Austria. We are joined on the programme now by our next guest, who is Maureen Kavanagh, CEO of Active Retirement Ireland. Hi, Maureen, good morning to you.
Good morning.
It's good to have you on the programme. Right now, I suppose you're going to focus on maybe older people, but I presume this loneliness captures people across all generations, also people who might feel lonely even if they're not alone. But talk to me about Active Ireland's initiative, their new programme.
Thanks very much, Greg. Active Retirement Ireland is a national network of older people. We have 450 local active retirement associations all over Ireland, and we have over 20,000 members within that. And obviously during COVID, all our activity started from the stopped from the 20th of March onwards. All our local groups closed down, all our regional and national activities, same as the whole country. And what we found is that because older people, and a lot of older people didn't have access to the internet, didn't have access to digital skills, found themselves without their vital social networks that had been so important to them. So as the group started to come back, we were looking at, well, what was the impact of COVID on the mental health of older people? Because we'd been involved in a survey with an alliance of organisations called Telling It Like It Is. And that survey showed that older people were impacted hugely by the restrictions, and it did impact them on them. It made them feel old for the first time in their lives. It made them feel more vulnerable. And for some people, the 2 years of lockdown was too much in that they felt they couldn't come back.
What it also did is, I think, from talking to people, it made them feel the problem. It made them feel the burden. You know, because young people, you can't do this because of granny or granddad or whatever, you know. And I think a lot of the language too, if you were in that, if you were a part of that cohort, you would go, right, well, am I the problem here? Because, but also what I would hope to, because we do move on really quite quickly. And for a lot of people, no one wants to remember lockdown. But I think we should remember elements of it, because I think a lot of us got an insight into loneliness, into isolation. You know what I mean? And we shouldn't forget that. And maybe that can help us sympathise and understand more what it must be like for the older people affected, like we're talking about. We should be able to empathise with them more.
Yeah, absolutely. And it wasn't just older people, Greg. It was anybody that was vulnerable. And it was done, you know, it was done in an emergency. It was done for the health of the country. And you know, and now that we're moving out and we have to look, you're right, we have to look at the lessons learned. So what we decided to do in Active Retirement Ireland was to look at, well, what have older people done themselves to bring themselves back out of lockdown? And out of that came this wellbeing toolkit. So we started with a grant from Mental Health Ireland, and we did consultations with older people who had come back out. And what we found is that people were able to use their social networks and their local active retirement groups to talk about their experiences. And that really, really was like a salve and a great support for people. And they were able to share experiences. And there was a joint coming together of a similar experience, because once you were over 70, it didn't matter whether you were in the perfect health or not, you were actually restricted. And they were able to voice their anger at that as well, and we assisted them to put that into the words of that it was ageism, that it wasn't about you being a vulnerable older person. It was just, they're 70, there you go, you're on lockdown. But it's about moving on then, and what do we need to do next? So this wellbeing toolkit was developed from that. And the members themselves said, look, we don't like the word toolkit because that feels a bit like fixy. So what we want to do is we just want to call it a wellbeing program. And the second name of it is called Laugh More, Stress Less, Live Better. And they're the very words of older people themselves. And this toolkit is based on what people did to bring back something normal back into their lives and within their groups. And it opens conversations on what matters to older people. It creates spaces for people to share their experiences and to share their things that they did, and also to draw on the experience and wisdom that we have within Active Retirement Ireland and our 20,000 members.
Yeah, and I suppose there's so many different people affected in different ways. Like, I've spoke to people, older people, who come out of lockdown singing and dancing effectively and got straight back into everything. I speak to people who are still cautious. They still believe that the adverts that are running, you know, if you're over 70, get this and it'll help you protect that. And I understand why that has to be done, but that feeds into their natural nervousness, you know, when they still feel that, right, it's still out there, I can't really go out and enjoy my life as I did previously. And then there are those who felt isolated before COVID and nothing has changed. I've spoken to people who don't speak to a person from one end of the week to the next. Can all of those people benefit from this toolkit, do you think?
Yes, indeed. And that's what we would hope. We would hope that it would be there, that people will be able to pick and choose elements out of it. And even if it gets somebody who has been isolated and lonely pre-COVID and they're listening and they're saying, well, I always knew there was groups out there, but I don't know how to join them. Then what we're saying to them is, have a look around. What's in your area? Is there something nearby? Is there something that you can do? Is there a neighbour or friend that you know that might go to one of those groups? Would you go along with them? And what we're saying to people who go to groups, and be those active retirement groups or whatever they are, is there somebody that you think you could extend that hand of friendship and say, would you like to come along with me to the next group? And because we do know, and international research has shown, that social connections are vitally important for reducing loneliness, for improving health, and for just getting people out there and talking.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously, there's going to be, I think, an urban-rural divide here, because, you know, there are options for people in more urban areas in terms of bus connections or maybe something being closer to them. Sometimes you can live, you know, 1 kilometer up a lane in parts of the Northwest, and there is no way you could attend something in the nearby village. I suppose that's where someone could offer a lift or what have you, or maybe even, the rural link can play some sort of a role in this as well. You know what I mean? But we have to give people, if they're mad to get out and do something, we have to be able to enable them to do it too.
Absolutely, Greg, and I agree. And I'm from a very rural area in County Waterford, and I have to say the local link has been the best thing that has come in to the area, because it comes through the village now a couple of times a day. But equally, I do know people that would live 2 miles away from where the local link can stop, and they just don't see that as an option. But there are options, like, for people to look around. Is there a GA club in your area? Is the GA club doing a walking group? Is the local active retirement group in the area? Who are the members of that? Could I go along and get a lift with somebody to that group? So it really is about getting information out to people, and for people to be able to, if they're going along to Mass on a Saturday evening or on a Sunday, is there a little newsletter nearby that you could look at to see what are your options? And if not, pick up the phone and ask citizens advice. Is there anything in the area? So if you're going to the post office to pick up your pension, try and talk to somebody to see, is there any group in your area? What are the notices up on the notice board? So it's about, I suppose there's a bit about yourself having to say, I don't want to live my life like this, but also, so what do I need to do? Mm. But there's also a bit about communities all over Ireland stepping into the shoes of somebody who doesn't have access to the internet, who doesn't have a great social network, might know about things. How do we get information out to them?
And also, and your too, own, I think,
like local radio is absolutely fantastic. It is the best way of reaching people across Ireland.
Yeah, and I think older people, and not just older people, who haven't really gone back out since COVID, we miss them. You know, we want to see them again and chat to them and have the crack. You know what I mean? Like, we miss them. Yeah. If they're listening now and they don't go out as much as they used to, I want them to know that we miss them, and we want them to sort of, you know, get back out there again, because these are the people, communities on whose shoulders are built, and also just our people that we miss when we don't get to engage with them. Now, if you laugh more and stress less, you live better. You will live better. You don't want to be.
Absolutely.
You don't want to be sort of running down the clock. You know, you'd get out there and as I say, stress less, laugh more, engage with people.
And that's what the whole ethos of Active Retirement Ireland is about. It's about creating a social network for people to get together, to have fun, to learn something new, to do something, to keep active, keep well. Local Active Retirement groups bring in speakers on various different issues. And it is run by members. It's run by volunteers. Like, this is all run by volunteers right across the whole country. And it is a truly participative and active organisation at grassroots and local level.
Yeah.
And it's a great organisation, I have to say.
I think this text is probably typical, because it can be difficult for families too, who've an older person that they love and care about, and they can see the change in them. Do you know what I mean? And they're not out as much as they used to be. So maybe you can offer some advice. People have to want to make the move themselves, but maybe you can help. And it reads as follows. My aunt is one of these people, but she's very quiet in nature, and we cannot get her to take the first step to join anything. How do you think we can best support her to make the first call or the first move? So they don't want to force her into anything, and she perhaps wouldn't allow them to either, but they think that she would benefit greatly from joining up with something or getting involved in a group or a club or something.
I suppose what I'm thinking here is that if that was my aunt, the first thing I'd be doing is asking, well, what are her likes? What does she like to do? Does she have access then to information about those likes? Does she know, or is it just a general, I'm really concerned about my aunt and I know she would benefit from getting out. But sometimes that can be very daunting for somebody to take the first steps into, what am I going out to? So it really is about understanding, what is it that would get your aunt out the door? Would that be going to a coffee shop and having a bun? Would it be joining, going up to the local library or whatever that would be? I don't know, but it is about understanding and having that, just have that conversation. And that's what this toolkit is about. Yeah. It's about have the conversation. What
could
is
it?
Could
it be a choir? Could it be amateur dramatics? Anything. It could be knitting,
absolutely,
woodwork, whatever it might be. Yeah, it's finding what she's interested in and showing her a pathway to it.
And Greg, I would also say to that aunt, if she's listening, is that, like, what is it that you really, really want to do? Or is there something that you always wanted to do and never did? And you might be able to do that in a group of people that are around the same age as you, that all hold the same fears of stepping out the door and trying something new.
Yeah, because it can be chicken and egg too, Maureen, because we don't know how people are feeling. It could be anxiety. It could be a form of depression. You know what I mean? We don't necessarily think it could. I think maybe sometimes we look and go, well, is it because they just don't really want to go out? We can put little barriers up for ourselves and maybe talk to her about, how does she feel about going outside? How does she feel about interacting with other people? How does she feel in herself? Is she worried? Is she anxious? these are all emotions that might stop her taking that first step as well. So maybe talk to her about those things, and maybe you can find out a little bit more about her in the process.
Absolutely. And just for some people out there, the social group is not the way that they want to go either, but it might be something. There might be something out there for them. And it might be just a visit to a library. It might be a visit to an art gallery now and again. And that, and some people are very happy to sit at home and listen to their radio and watch their television, knowing that someone will call and say hello to them, because I think that's what it is.
It is. Some people just like to go out into the garden and want to get back indoors in time for the chase. And if that's what makes them happy too, that could be it. How do people access the wellbeing programme?
At the moment, we're rolling it out through the local active retirement groups. So if there is a local active retirement group in your area, that is where you'll get to know about it. But we're training up older people to be facilitators themselves to deliver the programme in the local active retirement groups. And then after that, we will expand it out, hopefully.
So we kind of have to get people engaged with the local active retirement groups to get access to
moment,
this. So
it's a little bit of a
roadblock, that, isn't it?
It's not really, because this is a brand new programme and we do need to test it and we do need to pilot it. But there are elements of it that people can look at and go, do you know what, that little bit there that says about having good conversations, that's something that I could do.
Yeah. Okay. Listen, it's been lovely speaking to you. Thank you very much indeed, Maureen. Have a lovely day.
Thank you, Greg.
All right. Take care of yourself. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's Maureen Kavanagh there, who is... Maureen is CEO of Active Retirement Ireland. So if you have something going on in your local community, particularly for older people, and maybe you would like to see numbers boosted or what have you, please get in touch with us and we can promote it for you as well. And it would just be really nice if one person listening was connected to one thing in their area. So wherever you are across the Northwest, if you have something going on for older people, because sometimes you can be right next door to something and not really realise it's happening, I'm more than happy to read it out here. So text it into us or call Caroline 086 60 25 000 if you want to jot down a text, or give us a call on 074 91 25 000. And, you know, Letterkenny, but outside Letterkenny, right across the region. If there's something going on in your area and you'd like to see new members who you think might benefit from it, please get in touch with us and we will hopefully be able to get someone engaged. 1 in 12 cancers went undetected during the first 2 years of the COVID-19 pandemic, a report from the National Cancer Registry of Ireland has estimated. Rachel Morrow is Director of Advocacy and External Affairs with the Irish Cancer Society and joins us now. So, Rachel, good morning to you, first and foremost.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I am good. Right. I suppose when you were sort of gathering this data, would 1 in 12 have been where you thought we'd be at, or less or more than you might have expected, I wonder?
So we know, Greg, that there was a shortfall in the numbers of cancers diagnosed in 2020, and that number was around 2,600. And then yesterday we learned that in 2021, that 1,700 cancers weren't diagnosed. So it's really concerning for us in the Irish Cancer Society, because that indicates that around 1 in 12, like you said, Greg, were undiagnosed in 2020 and 2021. And what we're worried about is that this means that people may have been diagnosed at a later stage, although we're not able to tell that yet. But everything that we were hearing during those years, 2020, 2021, was that people were putting off getting advice around signs and symptoms. They were finding it more difficult to access health services because, as you know, there were longer waiting times, and the health services had to be spread between COVID care and cancer care and other diseases. So that was more challenging. And of course, the demographic that cancer hits is also the same demographic that were most vulnerable to COVID. Those tend to be older people. So actually, some of the numbers that underline these findings yesterday, it may be that people actually passed away before they would normally have been diagnosed of cancer in a normal year.
Yeah, and were there particular cancers less likely to be diagnosed?
The word that we saw a shortfall in a number of cancers, they were different in 2020 compared to 2021. In 2020, because the screening services They were paused for a period of time, as you know, Greg, mm-hmm. that those cancers that we screened for, so cervical, breast and bowel cancer, we saw a drop in the number of cancers that were diagnosed during 2020. In 2021, those screening services, they thankfully recovered, and we saw a bounce back in those cancers. But over both years, we saw a shortfall for liver, pancreatic and kidney cancers. Mm-hmm. And these are cancers that are generally diagnosed later stage. So we do have a concern that maybe these were diagnosed at a much later stage, and that would have an impact on somebody's survival and ultimate quality of life as well.
Rachel, do we know what measures are being put in place to ensure this never happens again, that lessons have been learned? Because we never know when something similar might happen again. It might not even be a COVID, it could be anything. But to ensure that we don't end up creating a problem, a significant problem, which we actually can't put figures on, you know, in terms of deaths and what have you, and worsening outcomes. Are you satisfied the Department of Health are making sure that this never happens again?
Look, I think, Greg, that without exception, everyone was focused on trying to mitigate the impact of COVID on cancer care. And the Irish Cancer Society, you know, we were making representations on behalf of cancer care and cancer patients and decision makers. They were very mindful of trying to continue to deliver non-COVID care during the pandemic, and actually urgent cancer care, it was prioritised. The government put a lot of money into cancer services, but despite this, I suppose the health system couldn't operate as normal. Mm-hmm. And I think that
but retail could, Rachel. Do you know what I mean? We have to, I understand exactly where you're coming from and what you're saying and why you have to say it, okay? But we were able to maintain services in other areas. Mm-hmm. We have to make sure that if something like this ever happens again, that we are able to continue care in critical areas such as cancer diagnosis. I don't think there's any way around that. We have to make sure we don't make the same mistakes again.
I think that, like, one of the lessons that I'd point to is that, like, the health system had only been resourced to meet the immediate requirements of the most urgent patient. And in my mind, you know, that isn't healthcare, that's sick care. And that was very much the model onto which the pandemic was layered. So our health system was beleaguered going into the pandemic. You know, it hadn't been resourced adequately. It lacked the resilience it needed when it was faced with this crisis. So while COVID, you know, it revealed the true fragility of our health services, but it wasn't the cause of the systemic vulnerabilities. And I think that the lesson to learn there is that the health system and our healthcare workers, they need to be constantly nurtured, constantly invested in, developed, expanded and valued. Because if we do that right, then maybe the pressure on the acute and primary care systems mm-hmm. during future pandemics may be less.
Yeah, but there's lots of questions. Like, what were people that work in cancer diagnosis doing during COVID? I mean, do you know the answer to that? Were they working elsewhere in the health service, or were they at home, or were they in the building not actually accepting patients?
Absolutely. They were doing their very, very best in very difficult circumstances. And we know that the toll of the pandemic that it had on our healthcare workers, they had to do more with less. And I think that, you know, it's actually down to the cancer workforce and other people working in the health service that the impact of the pandemic on cancer care
wasn't as bad as it could have been. Okay. Rachel, yeah, exactly. Thank you so much for your time this morning. Have a lovely day.
Thank you. You too, Greg.
Okay, bye-bye. Rachel Morrow, Director of Advocacy and External Affairs with the Irish Cancer Society. News on the way.